Your first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackSidewalks.com.
Hello once again, everyone, and welcome into Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on CrackSidewalks.com. Joe McCann and Phil Bush here to just do this damn thing once again and just debate if this team's good or not. Seems like that's pretty much what we do. Some weeks we're good, some weeks we're not, some weeks we're not sure, and here we are once again.
We are the living embodiment of that Waterboy gif. Oh no, we suck again.
I don't know what the perfect GIF of Marquette basketball is. It's because it's back and forth. Sometimes yeah, sometimes nah. And you know, it was an emotional week for sure, Phil. And you know, today's show we're gonna talk about the week that was, talk about the last week, and what we believe this team can and cannot accomplish. And we might do a big dive on Wojo, since that seemed to be a super hot topic on Twitter over the weekend. But Phil, I want to at least start with something relatively positive. How was Senior Day?
Senior Day was good. They had some pregame where they just kind of introduced the players and the family, and kind of did a big thank you. And the crowd was very respectful and loud and appropriate. And then after the game, the three seniors kind of got up and gave a little speech. And overall, I thought it was solid. It was good. It was. It was a little bit emotional.
It certainly was. You know, I don't know if I want to do the. Yeah, I don't know if I want to do the eulogy on Marcus Howard's career just yet, because hopefully we have several more weeks of him. But I mean, we have at least three. We got this coming week. We got the Big East tournament, and then the. We got this coming week. That's one. We got the Big East tournament. That's two.
Oh, then we're talking the weeks. Oh, okay. I thought you meant games.
Yeah, we get the weeks, but yeah. And then we get the first weekend of the NCAA tournament, that's three. And boy, a fourth week sure would be nice, but we'll maybe talk about that later. But yeah, I think I'll maybe do the whole the whole post-mortem on Marcus Howard's career when it is 100% over. But it was, a very emotional day to see him and Sakar and Jace, their careers come to an end on senior. I feel like Marquette's record on senior day is terrible, by the way.
Second only to their record on National Marquette Day, it feels like.
I feel like senior day is worse. I feel like senior day is always sad because they lost.
Yeah, I think that's true.
I just feel like it's always that way. If somebody wants to look that up, I don't care. But, that's just the way it felt. But, it was a very disappointing loss. But, you got to admit, Seton Hall is damn good. And, I know a lot of us in the Marquette fan base, we don't care for Seton Hall. We don't like Seton Hall. And many of us in the preseason weren't sure about the preseason hype. But you got to give it to Seton Hall that they have lived up to it, and they look like a Final Four team right now.
Yeah, I mean, people, we'll get to this later on. People probably won't want to hear it. But as Wojo himself said in his postgame press conference, if Seton Hall plays like they did Saturday against everyone, I don't know who's going to beat them, right? Like, I mean, they had an outside game, they had an inside game, they had bench minutes, they had solid defense. Miles Powell was doing, by and large, very good Miles Powell things. That is just a really tough opponent, right? Like, that's just a tough draw to take on senior night. And, quite frankly, I mean, Seton Hall's probably, probably should be a top 10 team for sure.
Oh, I think they will be. We'll see when the AP poll comes out on Monday. But yeah, I think they will be. But, Seton Hall did play great. There's no question about that. But Marquette did not help themselves very much. Their defense just got torn apart. And really, no one other than Marcus Howard really gave you much offensively either, which was also frustrating. Some people were saying Marcus Howard shoots too much. I don't think he shot enough, because right. I don't think he got anything else from anybody else on Saturday. And, it seems like Seton Hall was just crushing Marquette with skip passes. There was always somebody wide open in the corner with either draining open three or just a little head fake in the drive to the basket. Mamu Kalashvili pretty much did whatever he wanted against Brendan Bailey or whoever he was guarding. I don't know, you probably didn't see it on television, but there was a timeout where they went live into the huddle, and it wasn't Wojo, it was Stan who was actually going off on the team, saying how terrible they were doing on defense, and he went right at Brendan Bailey, said, I told you he was going to post you up, and he keeps doing it, and he keeps going right to the basket on you. The coaches were pretty animated and really hot about the way the team was playing defense that day, and it just never got any better. And when you play that way against a top 15, top 10 team, you're going to get your ass kicked, and Marquette did.
Yeah, well, and so this is the thing. Yeah, I definitely had some quote-unquote knowledgeable fans behind me during the game complaining about Theo John being soft and Marcus Howard shooting the ball too much, and I'm like, boy, I don't know that we're watching the same game, but cool. I will say this about the game, like, and this is where I struggle because I can't dissect like what was game plan and what was bad defense and what was bad game plan, right? Like, because you mentioned the skip passes into the corner. I mean, the defense was clearly set up to kind of double on the perimeter, especially when it was Miles, when they did the pick and roll, right? The hard hedge, it wasn't like a Matt Helt out, three quarters of the way out to the logo type of hedge, but they were hedging aggressively with the post guys on defense, kind of forcing a soft double. And then that forced the wings to come in to the post should the ball get entered there, which left them 25 feet from the corner shooters. Now, Seton Hall is a 32% shooting team, right? So you got to think that's part of the design. So do you chalk that up to Seton Hall just was shooting really hot, or like was it bad game plan? I mean, where from your perspective watching it on TV, where did you kind of fall with that?
I don't think they had a great defensive plan, and yeah, Seton Hall is a 32% shooting team, but take a 32% shooting team and give them wide open looks, they're going to shoot better than 32%. Yeah, you got to have somebody out there, and yeah, I think they did sag off the shooters way too much and just leave them, they just left guys way out there, so those skip passes were just crushing them all day. So I do not think they had a great game plan defensively for Seton Hall at all, and I don't know what a better one would have been, but what they had was not great.
Yeah, I generally agree with you, but I would point out that Marquette, who's a much better three-point shooting team than Seton Hall, was left not largely wide open, but had a lot of open looks against Creighton the last time we played them at home and didn't hit those either, right? So in theory, it could work. But yeah, it was... It was not a great game plan, but the defense, I think it's important to know Paint Touches had some tweets about it today, kind of talking about the defensive struggles are not necessarily like in a uniform, this defense sucks all the time, whether it's directly a correlation or not, or maybe it's indicative of other things, but the defense seems to struggle most when it matters most in terms of big games, right? Like if you think of all the big games, and that's where the perception kind of comes in. The games that matter, Marquette's defense seems to struggle significantly. I mean,
one thing I could say: when you play good teams, your defense is going to be worse because they're better, they're more talented offensively.
Yeah,
that might be.
Yes, it's kind of obvious, but yeah, it's a good point.
I mean, yeah, your defense is going to be awesome against DePaul and St. John's, but it's not going to be so good against Seton Hall and Creighton. So maybe that's part of it. But yeah, I will say that when this team goes into slumps offensively, I think struggles on offense, it does let it affect them on defense sometimes. And Wojo has even said that, whether it's in post-game press conferences or in the huddle. He said, so we're letting our struggles on offense affect us on defense. You've heard Wojo say that.
Yeah.
And I think he's right about that, is when they get mad or they get frustrated or they're pissed they didn't get a call, that's still in their head when they get to the other end of the floor and they're not focused.
Yeah, I also think when I've talked about it a lot, I think the other problem is when they're missing shots, like when the offense is struggling or if they're committing live ball turnovers, their transition defense is not good, right? Like if Marquette can get set, generally their half court defense is solid. It's when other teams get out and run that Marquette really truly struggles, in my opinion. So I think that's where the bad offense really feeds bad defenses, because they just get frustrated and don't track back or aren't quick to react. And there was a couple of times where during that game with Seton Hall, like, Marquette had great opportunities to at least, you know, you don't want to spend the whole game going trading baskets when you're down 10, 12, 15 points. But they had opportunities to get buckets on the offensive end that would have kept them within striking distance. But instead, they missed layups or routine jumpers that resulted in Seton Hall going the other way, which allowed them to extend the lead to, you know, 20 points by midway through the second half.
Yeah, those little things, those add up when you screw up on one end, give up two on the other, you know, a little 4-point, 5-point swing like that. It's crushing when you're down by 5 points and you're suddenly down by 10, you know. This team, I think they struggle in chaos for sure. Like, when things are not, like I said, not in the half court, slowed down for them, I panic maybe sets in sometimes, and they get, and frustration compounds itself instead of, you know, calming down, and, you know, maybe they don't have a calming presence on the court to say, look, guys, let's just take a breath here and get it right, because we've done it right before.
Yeah, and I think by and large, I mean, some of the players are, I'll say, volatile emotionally. I mean, Kobe McEwen at this point, I am loath to pick on particular players, but I really got to wonder, is Kobe even playable at this point?
Yeah, I do wonder if the coaching staff gave up on him a little bit. What was his final minutes on Saturday?
See if I want to say that. It was like 20.
Because I want to say they really sat him in that second half. It was. Let's see, I didn't see. All right, is it 16? He only played 16 minutes on Saturday. I try to hesitate because we are talking about teenagers, 20, 21-year-old kids here, but who play for books and tuition. But, man, Kobe McEwen likes to dribble.
Like, yeah.
He just likes to dribble and dribble and dribble. And his offensive rating was 53.
Not good, Bob.
That is the worst on the team by, like, 50%. Everyone else on the team pretty much everyone else had an offensive rating of at least 101. Marcus, his offensive rating was 129, talking KenPom stats here. Theo's rating was 139. But, you know, Kobe McEwen, man, when your point guard's offensive rating is 53. But, yeah, like, I think Wojo was kind of done with him in that second half because, yeah, like I said before, if Kobe plays for the entire game the way he plays in the last 5 minutes sometimes, he would be a first-round pick because he is just unstoppable sometimes late in the game. Seems like he hits everything.
Right.
But Saturday was just one of those games, man. He just kept dribbling and dribbling and dribbling, and like, he puts his head down, and he's kind of the guy, he's like the guy you hate to play with in a pickup game.
I was literally going to make that call, like
the guy you play with at the pickup game at the gym who just never passes, and just like, dude, pass the ball instead of just dribbling and dribbling and just throwing, just going into traffic and throwing up stuff. And that's what Kobe McEwen becomes sometimes.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it's got to be maddening for the coaching staff because I bet he's like not like that in practice.
Well, and he's to take the pickup game further. Not only is he the guy that doesn't pass the ball, but if you take a contested shot, he's chirping in your ear on the way down about how he was open or you know why you got to stop the ball like that or whatever. You know, I mean he's an emotional guy.
Very emotional.
And again, I'm not trying to bag on, you know, on a kid, you know, essentially half our age, right? But
yeah.
But again, what he brings to the floor, and I mean, really, Marcus was the bright light out of the whole, even with two fouls in the first half, the whole game, you know, Marcus showed up and did what he needed to do, right? And until the last 4 or 5 minutes, Sakar, Brendan Bailey, Kobe McEwen, even Jamal Cain to a certain extent, like, just, you know, Jace Johnson, Miss Bunnies. Like, when the supporting cast of your high-usage player doesn't show up on senior day, you're going to get a result like this. And I don't know what the answer is in terms of, like, how do you get all of the players playing well in the same game? But I feel like we haven't seen it yet.
Yeah. It's, you know, like, don't mean to be critical, but did you hear Marcus Howard on John Rothstein's podcast last week?
Yes. Yes, I did. The no criticisms.
It's not criticism. It's just facts.
Yeah.
He said, for those of you who missed it, Rothstein asked Marcus Howard to do his best Wojo impression, and it was pretty funny. But he said Wojo's favorite thing to say in film is, guys, it's not criticism. It's just facts. You know, like he just says that phrase over and over. He's like, guys, we're not sharing the ball on offense, or guys, we're not hustling back on defense. It's not criticism. It's just facts. And I think that's kind of what I'm talking about with Kobe is like, hey, man, he dribbles a lot and just doesn't get him on other people involved. It's not a criticism. It's just facts. But, and, you know, I don't know, another thing you may have missed, cause you were at the game, but in the, you know, they do those live, cut into the coaching, you know, the coaching huddles, and
right.
Kevin Willard said in the, like, early in the game, he said, hey, if Marcus is going to shoot every time, we're going to win by 20. That's what he said to his team. He's like,
wow.
Like, we just got to, he said, if Marcus is going to shoot every time, we're going to win by 20. He said, we just got to make sure we stay on Sakar and Brendan Bailey, make sure nobody else gets going. So basically, Kevin Willard's philosophy against Marquette is let Howard get his and just make sure we stop everybody else. And I think, honestly, it's not a terrible strat. It's not a terrible, because unless Marcus Howard goes supernova and gets 50, you know, you just, you know, you put your one guy on Howard, and if he gets 30, 35, that's okay. But if you hold the rest of the team to 30 combined, you're probably going to win. And I think that's kind of his strategy. That's exactly what he did. He's like, look, we're going to make sure Sakar doesn't get going. We're going to make sure Bailey doesn't get it going. We're going to make sure Theo John doesn't get going. We're going to make sure nobody gets going except Marcus Howard. If Marcus gets 40... okay, he gets 40, but we're going to win huge because nobody else is going to do anything. And that was his strategy, and it worked exactly the way he thought it would.
Paid off.
Yep. It worked. So, whether you love him or hate him, you got to tip your hat to Kevin Willard. That was his strategy. Just leave the superstar one-on-one and just make sure you stop everybody else. And that's what he did.
Yeah, well, and again, it doesn't help, though, when players do get open looks. And because, I mean, there were certainly times when the offense was struggled to generate a good shot or whatever. But certainly in the second half, there were at least a half dozen times that I recall players got good looks, good, clean, and just missed them, right? Even Howard had one or two of those that he missed. But if you're not going to get, you know, if you're not, you know, how talk about a wasted performance. Howard shot 67% from three, and better than 50% from two, and yet we let the other team shoot 50% from three, and the rest of our shooters shot essentially 15% from three. I'm doing some mind math there, but you know, as a team, they went 10 for 26. And Marcus went 6 of 9. So, So it was. So the rest of the team went 4 and 17. That's real bad.
Yeah, it's not great. It's not great, and it's frustrating because for most of the season, the entire team was really shooting great from three. And those numbers have kind of come back to earth a little bit as we've gotten into conference play, and it doesn't seem like Brendan Bailey or Sakar Anum or Kobe have continued to progress as legit three-point threats as consistently as we would like. I mean, their numbers on the season are still pretty decent, but it just doesn't seem to be there as much as it was, you know, in the non-con, maybe back in early January. But yeah, it's frustrating. But I guess, you know, and it was some way you could stomach it if Seton Hall truly is the best team in the league, and maybe they go on to, you know, an Elite Eight or a Final Four. You can say, well, you know, they beat us twice, but they were damn good. They were just way better than we were. But still, it just kind of sucks to lose on senior day. And yeah, you did waste a good Marcus performance because, yeah, I mean, I hate it for Marcus because he did pretty much everything he needed to do to solidify a National Player of the Year or Big East Player of the Year campaign. But, you know, if he's swept by Miles Powell, I don't know if he's going to pass him in a lot of casual observers' eyes. And I think you know, I think his National Player of the Year campaign is probably over. Big East Player of the Year, I think, is going to be really close. There may be some tiebreakers and some people still on the fence this week. We may have co-players of the year if the coaches can conspire correctly and say, all right, look, five of us are going to vote for Miles, five of us are going to vote for Marcus, and that's the way we're going to do it. But
I love that tinfoil hat. That's that.
I could totally see that. But no, it's but yeah, I hate it for Marcus because he is worthy of Player of the Year, whether in the Big East or, you know, I think he's certainly worthy of being a first team All American. But when you're playing for an unranked team, it's tough to get there. But you know, we'll see where he is. But you wish you could have gotten just a little bit more out of everyone else, especially, you know, on both ends of the floor, and they just didn't get it.
Yeah,
and, you know, well, I said at the beginning of the season. Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say, and I mean, so back-to-back great Marcus games, because, you know, we don't really need to talk about the wildly undermanned Georgetown game, but Marcus Howard's performance in that Georgetown game, I don't care if you're playing the Sisters of the Poor and Legless or you're playing a seven-player, you know, two walk-on Georgetown team, Marcus's performance against them was, I mean, 50% from three, 80-some-odd percent from two, seven assists, career high, five rebounds, only two turnovers. I mean, that was just a remarkable performance against Georgetown, and then turns it around and probably could have had another five or six assists if anybody could hit shots for him on senior day. So, you know, it's not like he's not putting up the numbers or putting out the performances, which is why I get so rankled when people kind of like, or, oh, Marcus shoots too much or whatever. Who's he taking the ball from? Who else is going to be scoring consistently? Anyone?
Nobody on Saturday.
Right.
You know, like, I truly believe, you know, when Marcus Howard knows one of his teammates is feeling it, he'll find him. Like, he'll get it to Brendan Bailey if he's feeling it. He's shooting the ball well. Kobe McEwen is shooting the ball well and getting to the hole and hitting buckets like he does sometimes late in the games. He'll get him the ball. But sometimes he's like, damn it, I'm just going to do this myself. And when he put up, like I said, when he puts up numbers like he has the past two games, by the way, two games post-mask, I think that's a big thing. I think he's comfortable without the mask now.
Yes.
Not to make a ton of excuses for him, but if those masks are not comfortable, and it's like, especially if they, like, if you sweat and they stink and, like, if they fog up on you, they're just not comfortable. It can affect you, you know, when you're trying to be super precise on these shots and you got something that, like, itches or bothers you, or just something you're not used to on your face, maybe it bothers you a little bit. Maybe you miss a couple shots that you wouldn't normally miss. So I think I'm cautiously, if you want to see just a little sign of optimism, reason why maybe this team could pick up, or Marcus in particular, could really pick up the pace here the next few games. I think he's more, you know, now that he's shed that mask, I think he's comfortable again. And I think he's, you know, seeing the net better, and he's just more comfortable shooting the ball. So wouldn't be surprised if he has two more big game performances, 30-plus points. He actually, you know, he fell to second in the nation in scoring very briefly this week. He fell behind that Javon Jackson kid at UTSA by just like 0.1. But then he had his performance on Saturday and he passed him again. So he's like 0.4 ahead of him for right now. So that might be tight heading down the stretch if that's something you're keeping track of.
Well, if Marquette's going to perform at all, Marcus is going to have to carry the scoring load, I guess.
Yeah, I am 100% fine with him taking every single shot if that's what it's going to take for Marquette to win games. You know, like, look, when Sakar's going and Bailey's going or whoever else is shooting the ball well, sure, get them some extra shots. But Marcus Howard does not need to pass just for the sake of passing, just to make people feel better about others being involved. He does absolutely not need to do that. When he's putting up an offensive rating of 120, 130, 150, dude, shoot, man. Just shoot all you want. He's shooting 40% from three on the season, and he's shooting much better without the mask. So shoot all you want.
Yeah, I was just going to say, when he had the he's at over 40%, but when he had the majority of the games when he had the mask on, he was he went 12 for 32. Right, so that, like, the fact that he's shooting 40% and had a stretch of games where he was basically shooting, because he went 7 of 16. He was shooting, you know, close to 30% on the in that stretch of games, and he's back above 40%. Man, bomb away at this point. Like whatever it takes.
12 of 32. That's still 37%. That's not terrible.
I guess. Yeah.
But I get to what you're saying. But the fact is, you
know what? That was his 2-point percentage, not his three. Sorry, he was 14 of 38. So
14 of 38. That's 36.7. So still 37%. We're just keep digging ourselves in holes here.
I'm going to go ahead and sit quiet here.
Stupid math. But no, the fact is he's better. He is better. Like 36% is below average for Marcus. He's a 40% shooter.
Yeah, which is crazy to think about, right? Like,
yeah, it is. But so Saturday was not great. Wednesday was predictable. You know, we got two games coming up this week. But before we get to those, I thought maybe we'd just keep, just because I hope this podcast reflects what people in the fan base are thinking, and seem, as is the case after every loss, people seem to talk about Wojo. Is he good? Is he bad? Is he somewhere in the middle? So, thought maybe we'd touch base on it a little bit. I think this is going to be a much deeper discussion in the offseason. But, you know, to me, Phil, he's just, you know, I'm kind of where I was in the preseason. He has his moments, good and bad. Which is, I think that, you know, you had your grand unified theory of Wojo post, which you've talked about on the pod, and that went over very well on cracksidewalks.com for people who read the whole article. I think you get a lot of positive feedback on that. That suggests that Wojo is improving slightly, specifically in the close games. But something that our friend Ruby over there at Anonymous Eagle kind of pushed back a little bit. Said, let's not leave out the blowout losses, which tend to happen more often than we would like. And Saturday was essentially another one of those. Even though they got within five, it felt like the game was over well before that. So Saturday still felt like a blowout loss, even though if it doesn't go down that as that officially in the net. But where do you want to go from here on Wojo, Phil?
Well, you know, I think Ruby's point is well-founded, right? Like there's certainly there's some blowout losses there, but I think with the Wojo thing, I think it would help if we're going to do a little bit of a point counterpoint. So like, let's bring up, you and I can each bring up either a pro or a con about Wojo, and then we got to kind of like, you know, the other is going to counterpoint that one. And then we kind of say, all right, is the point or the counterpoint, which one's better? We're not going to officially keep score. That's okay. Asinine. But you know what I mean? Like, just at the end of the conversation, it's like, all right, was the negative Wojo or the positive Wojo kind of more collectively? Because I think, much like the fan base, I think you and I kind of represent two sides of the coin. I tend to be, one, optimistic generally, but two, I'm, you know, on the more pro Wojo side than I think you are. And so yeah. I think you take the negative side of the equation. I'll take the positive side, and we'll see where it lands.
Okay. So how do you want to start?
I'm going to start with – so let's start with this because we talked about the blowouts a little bit. So, and I'm going to try and shoot down the obvious counterpoint already in this point, so I'm cheating. But, you know, in talking about it, yes, Wojo has been getting blown out in critical games. And, you know, what shows up in the net that's just glaringly obvious, and even Anonymous Eagle wrote about it, was that Marquette is 0 of 8 against top, you know, the top Q1A teams. So kind of the, you know, top 15 teams at home, top 25 neutral, and top 40 teams away. We have not beat a single one. So that sounds like a counterpoint. But the point is that it was even worse in previous years. Marquette is winning the games kind of where they're supposed to be. So they are clearly not a, what I would say, a top 25 team, but they are continuing to improve where they're on the cusp of the top.
Okay, so basically, your point is they are beating the teams they're supposed to beat.
Yep, they're beating the teams they're supposed to beat, and the team has improved year over year.
Okay, from where they were. That's fair. That's fair, and I would say that a counterpoint is they just, there seems to be a glass ceiling that they don't beat, they don't really upset anybody. And if you never, if you only beat the teams that you're favored against, if you only beat, you know, win the home games against the under, you know, overmatched opponents, if you never really go on the road and beat anybody, you never really move into that upper echelon of a clear top 25, top 20 team. So that's where, like, my, like, to be, for those who are maybe a little newer to the program, maybe haven't listened to my Wojo takes over the years, I'm not so much on the fire Wojo campaign as much as I am, meh, if he left, I wouldn't miss him. But I totally get the idea of, you know, stay in the course, and maybe I'll maybe come back to this when we're all done with this point counterpoint thing. But just to stay on topic here, I would say just my counterpoint is, yeah, it's nice that I suppose it is good that they beat the teams they're supposed to beat, but you don't hang banners for, you know, beating teams that are 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th in the Big East, or beating the cupcake teams. You really see progress and you really celebrate things is when you win some games that you're not supposed to win. When you go on the road and steal one against the top 25 team, or you beat a team that you're a 10-point underdog against, or you're a 7 seed in the NCAA tournament and you beat a 2 or something like that, or whatever. So, like, that's, I guess, my counterpoint to it is, and plus they have been the higher seed twice in the NCAA tournament when they under Wojo, and they've lost both times, right? They lost as a 7. They were a 7. They lost to a 10, correct? That correct. Was South Carolina. And then they were, of course, they were a 5, and they lost to a 12. So while largely they have, this year they have beaten most of the teams that they should have beaten. Maybe Wisconsin. I think they were a better team than Wisconsin at that time. A rematch today, I think Wisconsin probably wins handily. But I would say overall, they're not taking that next step. They're not beating good. I said at the beginning of the season about this Seton Hall game, if you want to be one of the big boys, you win this freaking game. Yep. When the top dog comes into your house and you're favored in Vegas, it's senior day, it's a home game, you should expect to win your home games. And if you want to be one of the big boys, you win that game. If you're okay being in the middle of the road, yeah, you can lose that game and say it's okay, they're better than us. But just don't tell me you're a great program. Or just don't tell me you're an elite program when you always lose to teams that are better than you. Say, yeah, oh, it's fine.
I will add, like, I'm piling on to your counterpoint against my own point, but I will add that this is also year 6, right? Like, at some point, so what year does the expectation that you're going to beat some of the big dogs, when does that show up?
Right. And the thing is, they've done more of that. I mean, Wojo is the only coach in Marquette history to beat a number one team in the regular season. He is that.
Right.
So, like, I mean, they have had some nice wins. Like, let's not pretend he's never had a nice win. He has had some. But as far as those really big ones that really move the needle and really energize the fan base, those are a little lacking.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, and I guess I'll concede this first point counterpoint to you. So what's your biggest hang up, you know, in the Wojo era? What's your first big point?
Okay, here's something I was thinking about on Saturday. I don't know if this is so much a point counterpoint as much as just a discussion I would like to have with you. Mm-hmm. So basically, I'm going to throw the point to myself, and then I'm going to throw my counterpoint.
Okay.
The point, Wojo's a great recruiter. Okay. So, what were you on Twitter at all after the game Saturday?
A little bit.
But what was the big gripe about how that game went?
That we had a bunch of recruits in the building? And
Well, that the big thing people were saying is that Marcus just got no help.
Oh, right.
So, the question is, if Wojo is a great recruiter and Marcus Howard has no help, how are both of those things true? Because to me, it seems if he's a great recruiter, then there would be plenty of help. And then there's some other reason they're not losing games. Or we are overrating him as a recruiter, and that's why there's no help. That we are just overrating the recruits that he's getting, and he's really not that great a recruiter, and that's why there's no help. Or the third option, I suppose, is he is a great recruiter, and there's no help, and something is happening in between that stage that great prospects are not becoming great players. So that's kind of I want to throw back to you. If I'm saying there's no help, but he is a great recruiter, how would you throw that back at me?
Yeah, so it's an interesting. I would say like there was no help in that particular game, but I mean each of the players on the roster has had games that have been individually outstanding, right? Like I think there's if we dug through it, and I'm certainly not prepared for it, but if we dug through even the conference season, we could find the top six or seven players on the roster, right? Kobe McEwen's got the Xavier overtime game on the road when Marcus went out. Sakar even was part of that. You know, Theo John has had a couple of games. Jace Johnson has had a couple of games, right? Where the talent was obvious that in Big East competition they were able to perform. And Marcus is, you know, no doubt an outstanding player. And Sakar, like, because as you were going through it, I was almost thinking there's another, like, is there a development problem? But you can point at the likes of Sakar and some others that are clearly developing, right, from what they were as freshmen. So this is where I go back to, and I almost box myself into a corner where I give a counterpoint that results in another point. I wonder if it comes down to coaching. Like, that's
kind of where I am too. Is that if they are both true, then if they are both true that they are good recruiters and they are bringing in good prospects, but the results aren't there, that has to be kind of the factor you consider is on the coaching side.
Yeah, but I mean, let's look at the talent alone. Do you think, let's say, our five starters? Do you think they would be starters on any of the other top five Big East teams?
Yeah, see, that's really tough for me because I like so many of the players individually. I just don't like the sum of the parts. I think Theo would have a great role on many of the top teams in the Big East. Like if Theo was hypothetically a free agent, I think every Big East team would take him. I probably the same. Kobe would probably be coming off the bench for some teams just because of his
volatile. I kind of like him coming off the bench for our team.
but you said one thing you were thinking about, this is kind of a different point, counterpoint about how, yeah, we can pick out games where Sakar's had great games and Bailey's had great games and Jamal Cain has had great games, but what we call flashes of brilliance, a non-Marquette fan would probably call inconsistent.
Yep.
Say, that's fair. Yeah, like you say, well, what you call a guy who every once in a while scores 15 points, I call a guy who averages 2.5. Like that, you know, that's big picture what some of these guys are, unfortunately. Yes, there have been games, I would say, for almost every guy on the team where we have said, wow, what a game for him. Let's see more of that. Like we've said that about Jamal Cain. We've said that about Greg Elliott. We've said that about Brennan Bailey. I have a friend at work, my Georgetown friend, who I reference all the time. He swears Brennan Bailey's like the best player on our team because every time we play Georgetown, he hits shots. So yeah. because that's the only time he watches Marquette is when they play Georgetown. And he says Brennan Bailey is the best freaking player on your team. I don't care what you say because he always plays well against Georgetown. But yeah, we said that about Bailey. We said that about Sakar. Sakar's only had the most of those type games. So I would say overall he's probably our second best player. Guy who is gonna more often than anyone else on the team other than Marcus is most likely to get you a 20-point game. But, again, a non-Marquette fan would say, well, I look at the average and I'd say that's kind of more that is more what he is than the high points that you point to.
Yeah, that's fair. I wonder if this comes back to roster construction, right, and strategy. We've talked about Marcus Howard as a high-usage player and this is not going to be a statement about maybe Marcus shouldn't be high-usage. I absolutely 100% support it, right? Like, he is
that.
Yeah,
I do too.
But the roster construction, I really wonder if this team is constructed for, like, I don't know that when Wojo 2 or 3 years ago was constructing rosters and bringing folks in, and, oh, by the way, the Hauser's leaving impact this, certainly. Like, I don't know that you could necessarily, as a freshman even, that we could have said, hey, listen, Marcus's senior year is going to be a high-usage guy, and we need, right, you know, we need other players that can complement that high-usage strategy. And so I really wonder if that's to you know, because you really talked about it, you brought it up with I like the parts, I just don't like what they add up into. I think that's the struggle we have, is the parts are not parts that are consistent with one high usage player. And you can put that on Wojo, but and I'm not saying if you took Marcus off the team they would be better. I'm not saying that either. I think they're kind of in this no man's land.
Yeah, I 100% do not believe that. Like, some people try to tell me they're going to be better next year when Marcus is gone and it's more spread out. I am calling bullshit on that. Like,
right.
Like unless this freshman class is out of this world, like if they get Kareem Manet and he is truly an NBA prospect and Dawson Garcia is an NBA prospect, I might change my tune, because maybe then that would be a transformational freshman class. But you do not replace a guy like Marcus Howard just like that and suddenly be better. There is no way this team is better without Marcus Howard. Just like the way I said in the preseason, there's no way this team's better without the Hausers. I don't think they are. But
no.
But yes, there's no way this team is better without Marcus Howard. He is absolutely freaking critical, this team even being close to relevant.
Right. And so the point I'm really making is, and it's kind of the only counterpoint I can come up to, is I think the talent, like, looking at the talent individually, it's good talent. I think they have the talent to compete in the Big East. It's just the collection of the parts for the strategy that had to take place this season. I don't think it adds up to more than an average team.
Yeah, that's the thing I just wish I can't figure out is – like I said, take them all and throw any player at me individually, and I would probably mostly say positive things about what that guy brings. But altogether, it just doesn't work at a high level. It works on some level. It's like, it's not like this team is a joke or an embarrassment. I mean, they're going to make the tournament, and they may even win a tournament game this year. I think they're going to be, I think no matter what happens, they will be favored in their first round game. Whether they're a 7 over a 10 or a 6 over an 11 or maybe even an 8 over a 9, they will probably be a small favorite over whoever they play. And I think they'll have a chance to finally get a tournament win and maybe at least erase that one criticism. But does this work at a high level, at a Big East championship level? No, not quite. I mean, we're at the point in the season we can say for sure that Marquette is a clear step behind the best teams in the Big East in Seton Hall and Creighton.
Yeah, I think the numbers bear it out, right? They are a top 30 team. They're not a top 25 team, right? Like as long as we don't play a top 25 from a metrics or a ratings standpoint, team in the NCAA tournament, we'll probably be fine. If we play a top 25 metric either in the net or the KenPom, we're probably going to lose.
Yeah, that's right. Without seeing a bracket yet, that is kind of where, like, my gut feeling is they'll win their first one and get hammered in their second one, and that'll be it. And will that be a successful season? We can debate that when we get there. But that's kind of where I'm feeling right now.
Yeah. So, all right. So I'm going to go with one more point.
So, okay, that's fine. Because we've
been going for a bit, but last
we actually have been talking quite a bit. Yeah, sure.
So I want to bring up. So I think you got to look at the collective with Wojo, right? So Wojo, the program, by all accounts, run clean. By all accounts, with the exception certainly of the Hauser brothers, and that was a pretty big exception. But I mean, we're not going to relitigate that one. But the players all, and you know, Marcus even kind of in his senior day speech, kind of, it depends on how you want to read into it, but I feel like it was a little bit of a subtle dig at some of the anti-Wojo crowd and saying, hey, you know, I don't care what anyone says. Wojo's always going to be my coach. He believed me when others didn't.
And I respect that.
Right. And, you know, and he's kind of like, I'm ride or die with Wojo. Okay, fine. But by all accounts, Wojo runs a clean program. The players that play for him, you know, respect him and like him and believe in him. He is recruiting, at least from a quote-unquote stars perspective. You know, he's you know, the rating services are talking about his recruiting classes. And so I think the pieces are there. Again, I go to he is learning on the job. He's never been a head coach before. He's never, and this is, I think, an important thing, he's never had to out-coach someone before. Even when he was like Team USA basketball or with Duke, they almost always had a talent edge. And while Wojo is recruiting well, he is not out-talenting other teams in the Big East yet. He's certainly not better talent than I would say Villanova or Seton Hall, at least this year, right? So he's not out-talenting people. He's got out-coaching, but he's learning, right? The alternative to Wojo is hitting a reset and going back to square one, which maybe works out. But right now, for me, the high side of Wojo growing into the job is less risk than starting over and hoping someone else that is probably inevitably an assistant coach is going to have to go through the same growing pains.
Yes. And you know what? And this is kind of what, more or less, what spawned this like 50-tweet thread on Sunday, like with me and Alan mostly, but you know, others chiming in too about, you know, what would this team look like, or you know, is it time to move on from Wojo, or is he doing great, or is he not? And you know, as much as like say I'm not all in on Wojo, I can 100% understand why you would want to at least give this another couple years and see what he is like as a coach post Marcus. Because basically, if you sum up the Wojo, you know, he had 1 year of a total rebuild, right?
Yep.
And which, you know, you can't judge his record on that. He had 1 year with Henry Ellenson, which was cool, but the wins weren't there, mainly because there wasn't a whole lot around Henry Ellenson. And then we've had the Marcus era of 4 years, and that's where we are now. So that's, so like, I guess what I'm saying is, I can understand wanting to see Wojo in a new era and see how he can maybe adjust to a team that maybe doesn't depend on one shooter and see maybe he does continue to evolve as a coach. I can totally get that, especially with this class that is coming in. This is a really good class. We have a McDonald's All-American in Dawson Garcia. We have Justin Lewis, who is, I don't know where he is on the rankings. Last I saw, 70-something. But he's a guy who's made the USA basketball team, like the U18 team, U17 team. He's played with that team. And I don't care what the recruiting rankings say, I am all in on a guy who has routinely made USA basketball teams. Marcus Howard was one. He played with USA basketball quite a bit on, like, U14 or U15 teams. The U15 team was what he was. I don't know if there is a U14 team. But he... So basically, if you are a guy who routinely goes to a tryout with 50 of your peers and is selected as one of the top 10 or 12 guys, that's a guy I want. So that's why I'm excited about Justin Lewis. And yeah, Oso is long and maybe a bit of a project long term, but he's got so much potential there. And then if you get Kareem Manet, he's not committed right now, but it seems like Marquette's in good position with him if he decides not to go pro. That's an option on the table for him. So, yeah, you're bringing in a good class, and yeah, you are hitting reset to some degree, but reset with quite a bit of talent. So I guess, like, the counterpoint, I guess, is what good is having great talent if you never win with it? But I don't think it's definitive that Wojo can't win with great talent, because he's maybe not – hasn't had a team with a ton of talent outside of last year, which is why, you know, the Hauser transferring was so frustrated, because you would have loved to see him get one more year with that squad. Because, you know, they were preseason top 10 before that happened. But he didn't. And so, like, you know, the tough question is, when is it fair to evaluate a coach as far as he's the guy or he's not the guy? And, you know, I'm definitely in agreement that three or four years is not nearly long enough. You got to give a guy a chance to at least get a class through there. And so the fifth year, maybe you kind of know what you've got, but then he lost probably indisputably his second best player, and you could argue also his third best player, a year earlier than he expected to. And so that could not have happened at a worse time. Like, it could have been a time when he was totally, really
trending
ready to turn
upwards.
The corner.
Yeah.
They could have really turned the corner. Now, some others may say, well, that he may have had substandard results with them again, and then we'd be right here as well. Maybe. We might be. We'll never know that for sure. But I feel like I'm rambling on and on about this topic. But the you know, someone said to me this week, and it kind of hit home for me considering I live in Dallas, even though I'm not a Cowboys fan. But someone said, like, he's kind of like the Jason Garrett of college basketball. Like, he's a guy who might be there a long time, not have anything significant on the resume, but he's extremely well liked and just maybe waited out. When he has enough talent, he can win at a high level. And boy, that seemed kind of accurate, because I like, if Wojo has, you know, if he ever gets a team that has two or three, like, really good players, like top 50 prospects who live up to that type of potential, then, yeah, maybe they might win at a high level. And they kind of did last year. It's just last year is kind of forgettable in the fact that the way we got to that second place. Like, in a vacuum, a second place finish in the Big East is quite good and something right to celebrate and give a hat tip to. But the way they got to that second place, because we had all raised the bar in a championship about 2 weeks before that happened, it still feels like a failure. So I guess to kind of sum up my rambling point here is that, yeah, like, I can understand why you want to stick it out, and, like, I don't have a solid option for you, like, if you were to part ways with Wojo right now, to say it's definitely going to be way better in, like, 2 or 3 years. Now, like, some people say, well, what about John Beilein? Well, yeah, I would make that trade tonight if I knew Beilein would accept it. I'm not sure he would. And one thing, he basically said he went to the NBA because he was tired of recruiting. And if he's going to bring that attitude on the recruiting trail, I'm not sure he's a guy you want on your college basketball team. Now, if he brings the same energy and fire, like rediscovers a love for college basketball that he had at Michigan, yeah, I'd make that trade tonight. But outside of John Beilein, who I'm not even sure would be interested in the Marquette job, I don't know what a better option is. But at some point, I don't know if that's at 10 years or at 12 years or at 15 years, you got to have at least a few skins on the wall and say, look, we've won something, and Wojo's not there yet. Is 6 years a time to say, look, you don't have anything to really celebrate, it's time to move on? That's maybe a little bit early, but he's not exactly a new, like, coach that you need to give a ton more time to either.
Yeah, and I agree with everything you're saying, and I think I would sum it up this way, and this is why I thought the point-counterpoint is kind of a useful exercise, because quite frankly, I think what it boils down to is, if you want to see one side or the other, like, whatever side of the is Wojo good, not good debate, there is ample evidence to support your case. And so, like, there is not a clear-cut answer. There is enough evidence to support whatever case you want to make, which is why it gets a little bit annoying when people are like, oh, he's absolutely awful, or, oh, he's going to be great. You just got to stay with it, right? Like, we literally do not know. Like we have enough evidence to support any argument you want to make, but there is no conclusive proof one way or the other. I think what the whole argument boils down to is, what do you personally, and I'm not saying you Joe personally, I mean you generic John Q public, feel that that there is better luck out in the coaching market, or are we going to have better luck sticking with Wojo? That is literally the distinction. You can make an argument that Wojo's good, or you can make an argument that Wojo's bad. It all comes down to, where do you think the risk is in whether you make the change or not?
The great unknown is just so scary, and I think that's why – I think that's kind of where you are. Yeah, is like, gosh, hypothetically there could be a move, but we could get the next Dave Leto. You know?
the thing I keep coming back to that just seems so stark to me is – Wojo was our third pick in terms of head coaching options. The number one pick was Shaka Smart. And would you trade Wojo for Shaka Smart at this point?
Probably not. I've said before about Shaka, the results haven't been good, but you can kind of grade him on a curve a little bit. I mean, Andrew Jones was an All-American who got cancer. I mean, what can you do about that? And he's had to, like, I forget who it was, but he had to kick somebody off the team his first year, and he's had, like, an injury here or there, but still, even grading on that curve, the results have not been great. But he's been hot late, and he might make the tournament here. But just to answer your question simply, no, I would not trade Wojo for Shaka right now. I'm more comfortable with Wojo than Shaka right now.
Right, and so with that as a construct, like, so we could have had Shaka, potentially. We didn't. So Wojo ends up being the coach. So if we go out on the market again, who's to say if we end up with another Wojo, another Shaka, or, you know, we end up with a Brad Stevens, or we end up with, you know, like the second coming of Mike Dean, right? Like,
right.
That's the thing. And like, you don't, maybe somebody makes the decision like, oh, let's wait and see what the coaching market looks like. And then you pull the trigger, but like, I don't know. It is not at all clear cut. And that's why I say you got to give it, I think you give it 2 more years. And if we don't have a Sweet 16, like the marker I would put out right now is if we don't have a Sweet 16 and at least 3 total NCAA victories by year 3 of the 3 year, you know, this year, and then 2 more years, that you got to pull the trigger. That's like the worst case scenario. Yeah.
I hesitate on judging it just by tournament success.
You can balance it out with like if you win the Big East championship, like
yeah, exactly. That if he wins a Big East title, that matters big time. If he's somehow just gets into the top 10, you know, like I'm not saying that's happening next year, but hypothetically, if he's got a, you know, finishes the regular season with a top 10 team, and then crap, you know. Something happens and they lose in the first round. Yeah, that would suck. But if he's able to maintain a top 10 team, I'm not saying that's happened or even possibly likely. But you have to put some measure on the regular season success and sustained success. Now, if he's consistently 5th, 6th in the Big East, that's probably not enough for a lot of people. That might be tough. But yeah, and the thing is, like, he could make the Sweet 16 this year.
Yep.
And does that change everything? Probably not, big picture, but I think it gets a lot of people off his back. And I think it if, like, let's say just hypothetical world, he gets a 7 seed here and they get matched up with 2 seed San Diego State and they just catch San Diego State because they're the best team San Diego State has seen in 2 months. And wow, boom, they're in the Sweet 16 as a 7 seed. Does that mean he is clearly the guy and we're ready to give him a 10-year extension? Probably not, but a ton of people will be off his back, and people who say he can't win in March, they got nothing to say, so they got to move on to something else. So yeah, they could still make a Sweet 16 this year. Like I said, I think my prediction right now without seeing a bracket is win the first one and get hammered in the second one. But I push back a little on judging it just by tournament success, but to be fair, that is how we determine our champion. So at some point, you do need to have some success in March and show that it can be done.
Right. That's the whole point. Yeah. You got to get measured that way. But that is the thing I struggle with, right? Is like, does, if he goes to a Sweet 16, is he suddenly a good coach? Right. And people,
right.
It's hard to take these like explicit single markers, and it's more of a collective, but again, like it's so intangible. What are the things that are being looked at and decided on and stuff. Right. So that's why I say he's got to get more time, yeah. But I get the other side.
Yeah. It is tough. You know, it reminds me, Roy Williams loves telling the story after Dean Smith won his first national championship. He said, "Does it feel great to shut all those people up?" And Dean Smith simply said, "Look, I'm no smarter than I was 2 hours ago. Like, I just have a title now. That, like, nothing has changed." But the perception changes so drastically when you have a big moment. Like, if hypothetically Wojo gets to the Sweet 16, the narrative on Twitter that afternoon would be, "What a job Wojo has done! What a job!" That will be the narrative, I assure you. It's like, but just the, for better or worse, March success greatly amplifies the public perception of a coach. And, but like, while I would push back on, like say hypothetically, if Marquette makes a Sweet 16, I would probably push back on everything's fixed, but I would not totally dismiss it as a fluke either.
Right. Well, and And this is where, like you said, I think this is really important. And this, and I've brought this up that, you know, Wojo doesn't really have a personality. He doesn't have something to distract. He doesn't have a shiny object to distract the fan base in such a way that allows him to continue to build, right? Like, because he doesn't have a kooky personality that people can latch onto, because he doesn't have a little bit of it, it's not going to even take a lot, right? Like, if he had beaten South Carolina and then lost, and if he won an NCAA game this year, right? Like, the narrative's totally different. It's 6 years without an NCAA tournament win. We haven't had sustained NCAA success. Okay, well, that's a much tougher argument. So, like, the fact that we're putting, like, a single game on there, like, this one game makes a difference is kind of crazy to me. But it is the lack of the shiny object to distract the fans while he's continuing to build. And I think that's where it's tough. Like, that's why I react to, like, the people booing Wojo during the game.
Yeah.
Right? Like, because that is, like, that doesn't help the program any. If you want Wojo to get better, like, then, like, help him recruit better by not booing, right? That's just, I don't know. It's one of these self-fulfilling prophecies at times.
Just to kind of wrap it up, I for Wojo's sake, I am really pulling for him to get to the Sweet 16 somehow this year, because it will allow him the breathing room to push through what I think may be a tough year next year. I don't think they're going to be bad, but I think there are going to be a lot of games where they lose next year where they say, well, this was a big stage for this young team. And I think the we're a young team excuse is coming back next year, and it may be legitimate. They may be depending on quite a few 18-year-olds to have big impacts, and that might be tough. And I think it might be tough for that next year's team to make the tournament, and even if they do get in, to win a game. So that's why for Wojo's sake, I really want him to win at least one, ideally two games in the postseason this year, just because I think that will just give him a bit of a grace period next year, which I think next year may be a bit of a challenge. I'm not saying like 9th, 10th of the Big East challenging, but get ready for more losses next year than we had this year.
I would say a comparable next year is it could be like a Providence this year. I'm not saying that the team will be that good, but I think they'll struggle early for sure, and then may form up late with the talent, but that's the kind of season we might be in for. So yeah, it's a fair.
We'll evaluate that team when we know exactly what the roster is going to look like, because there's still some moving parts there, including the recruitment of Kareem Mané. But we'll get to that in hopefully 4 or 5 weeks when the Marquette season is over. But for now, I might at least talk about this upcoming week, which Marquette is facing two teams that I think they are clearly better than on a neutral court. Unfortunately, both games this week are on the road. And one of them is St. John's team that absolutely blew the doors off of Creighton on Sunday. I don't know if you caught that game.
Let's say it this way. I'm glad we're facing St. John's next Saturday and not the next game.
Yes. I'm glad we didn't face St. John's on Sunday, because we would have gotten absolutely hammered. But thankfully, hopefully they got that out of their system and Marquette can get two wins this week. Interesting, Phil, Marquette actually might need two wins to avoid the 7th seed of the Big East tournament. Because if they lose one, they may be in a tiebreaker situation with Butler and Xavier. Because Butler and Xavier play at the end, the regular season finale. So I'm not going to go through all the scenarios in my head, but they may be in some kind of tiebreaker scenario where they get bumped back to the 7, which would be terrible, because then you got to win 4 games in 4 days, and then you've got that first game against the 10 seed, which does probably nothing for you as far as helping your seeding. So I think Marquette does need two wins this week. Well, they definitely, if they get two wins this week, they're definitely avoiding that. They would definitely avoid the 7th seed, because they would finish 10-8, and both Butler and Xavier, one of them will finish 9-9 at best, because they play each other. So one of them is going to get another loss. So get two wins this week, you're safe. You don't have to play on Wednesday. That's important. I don't know how I really feel. I honestly still feel pretty good about these two games, even though they're on the road, because I think Marcus is playing better without the mask. And Marquette is still just better overall. And like, as weird as this sounds, I would almost be more worried about losing at DePaul if they had won against Seton Hall, because then you're coming off a huge emotional game, and then you have that letdown scenario that you see, not just Marquette, but like any team in sports coming off a huge, huge win that's really emotional. You have that letdown game where you get surprised. I think I'm almost more confident they beat DePaul because they lost to Seton Hall, because now I think they're like, they may be down a little bit, and they got to build themselves back up and refocus, as opposed to really being high on themselves and maybe getting caught by surprise, if that makes sense.
No, I agree, and I also think the wheels are coming off the Dave Lato era at DePaul. I think we kind of called that when everyone was raving about DePaul at the beginning of the season. But
I will admit, I was kind of buying into DePaul early on. I really was. I thought they looked I thought they had a nice resume. I thought they looked athletic. They beat Iowa. They beat Minnesota. They beat Texas Tech. Like, I thought they would be, a sixth or seventh place team in the Big East. I really did. But, yeah, you never bought into them. And I have to say, you were right on that one.
Well, every once in a while, blind squirrels and nuts or something like that. But, I agree with you that I think Marquette should come in focused against DePaul. They've got a lot to play for. If nothing else, just to prove that they aren't that they aren't a bad team. Again, I have DePaul as a horror show. St. John's on the road can be a horror show. But I do have faith. The numbers are telling us. We talked about it. If either of those teams was a top 20, a top 40 team, I'd be worried. Neither one of those teams is a top 40 team or even close to a top 40 team. So Marquette may end up playing them close or may win by, six or seven, something like that. But I think I think certainly against DePaul, they come away with a win. There's always crazy games where the other team just shoots, crazy good. But if Marcus is back in form and one or two or maybe, I don't think it takes more than, two of Marquette's players to really be playing well to beat DePaul. So I think they get the win.
St. John's was 14 of 22 from three against Creighton. That's 63% as a team against Creighton. While Creighton, on the other hand, was 4 of 27. That's 14%. 14.8%.
It's like they had a Freaky Friday, switched bodies.
Exactly. So I'm just hoping that is just a total fluke. Now, St. John's plays hard. I actually do like Mike Anderson as a coach. I think he does a really nice job, and he'll do much better than people thought he would long term at St. John's. But yes, Marquette's more talented. I kind of agree. The one thing I'll say about the Georgetown game, it did kind of what we said on last week's pod. It calmed the fears of a collapse. It just said, look, this team is not wheels off, spiraling out of control, Marquette. They totally rebounded and they beat the crap out of an inferior team. And that, I think, calmed people down. And then, you lose on senior day to a good Seton Hall team. So, you're not all the way, you're not completely on the uptick either. But the effort against Georgetown showed me that, look, the sky is not falling. Marquette has just lost to some better teams, and including a red-hot Providence team. And they lost to a very good Seton Hall team on Saturday. I think they'll regroup and be fine this week. Hopefully they get them both. If they only get one, if they lose them both, they're going to be in that seven game, and then I'll be really, really concerned about them going into March, or going into the tournament. But
we could still have a mini collapse.
we could still have it. If they were to hypothetically lose two games this week, that means they would. Just bear with me here. That means they would have lost six of their last seven. That would certainly send the fan base spiraling into a total, just total grease fire. But I don't think it's going to come to that. They've lost four out of five. That sucks. But most of those are understandable. At Villanova, you're always going to lose that game. Creighton was the hottest team in the country coming in. You don't have to love it, but it happens. You lose at Providence. It's frustrating, but Providence is on fire right now. They're playing really well and trying to get into the tournament. And then you lose to Seton Hall, who's looking like a legit top 10 team, Final Four contender. You don't have to love it, but it happens. It's not criticism. It's just facts. And then, but so you go this week, you're playing two inferior teams. You should win both of them. Yes, they're both on the road, but I don't think you need to make excuses for this team going into this week. They're better than both these teams. Just show that you still got some fire in you. I think they do. I think Marcus Howard is still going to play at a high level, make his closing argument for first-team All-American, which I think he deserves. Not sure he'll get that recognition. That's still going to be close in my mind, but I think he will finish strong, have a nice two games here. I think they win both games. They both might be close, just because that's the way we can't ever do anything easy. Just like Marty McFly in Back to the Future. Why do we always cut these things so damn close? But I think it'll probably be they'll. So get your heartburn medication ready. But I do think they will win both games this week.
Yeah, I agree. Both games are victories, and then we're talking seeding and Big East tournament, which, you know, that we've already gone super long on this one, but, you know, I don't talk about being between a rock and a hard place. If we do win two, do we want to finish fifth or sixth? We either get Providence or Creighton.
I would like one more shot at Providence, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah, it's got to go our way one of these days, right?
Well, you might be looking at Villanova, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Because maybe it depends. Because, you know, Creighton, they still have Seton Hall to go. Villanova, what do they have left? Villanova has Villanova has Seton Hall this week, too. So they both play Seton Hall, and Villanova has Georgetown. I don't know how that tiebreaker is going to work.
It could be Seton Hall, right? I mean, Seton Hall, if they're playing both Creighton and Villanova, could lose two games.
But, I guess that could – I suppose a three-way tie is hypothetical. Yeah, that is possible. A three-way tie for first. If both Creighton and Villanova win two games this week and Seton Hall loses two, that, yes, math is hard, but yes, that would do it. So that is possible. But, you know, Seton Hall just has to win one game this week and they win the Big East Championship outright.
We know how well that goes. If you just have to win one of your last couple of games, that's easy.
I don't know what you're talking about. I need to get another stiff drink to wash that thought away. But yeah, so I mean, I suppose, yeah, if you're the sixth seed, you could face either Seton Hall, Creighton, or Villanova as in that 3-6 game. But, you know, if you get up to that 5 game, you're probably looking at Providence again. Yeah, I would prefer one more shot at Providence, even though they beat Marquette twice. You know, so did Creighton. I don't know if I want to play Villanova. So if I have my choice, I'll take one more shot at Providence. But just please don't give me that 7-10 game where you have to play DePaul again.
Oh God, we don't need another season where our seeding depends on whether or not we can beat DePaul.
Yes, just don't lose to DePaul. We've had that creed many times before. Don't lose to DePaul twice. Definitely don't do that. But yeah, I'm still confident. I say two wins. So
yeah,
I agree. I'm trying to be optimistic and still believe in this team. And like, despite how down some people may be on this team, I still think they will not only be favored in their first game, they'll win a tournament game before it ends. But we'll deal with that when we get to it. I think we've talked enough on this podcast. You think so?
I think we've bored some people.
I think we've gone long enough. As always, we appreciate you checking in with us here on Scrambled Eggs. Hit us up on Twitter. I am Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOOF23. Crack Sidewalks is the team handle. You can go to cracksidewalks.com. We post a podcast there. You can leave your comments there. And we also have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page as well. Phil, let's hope we're optimistic and upbeat heading into the Big East tournament next week.
Yeah, let's be happy, win two games, and we'll talk about it next week.
All right. Enjoy the week, everybody. Seashells and balloons. Put your pitchforks away.